Grape Encounters is 100% estate grown. We have, however, removed the pretentiousness and added a healthy dose of fun.
Doesn't sound like any radio signal I've heard.
Grape Encounters is brought to you by EpicStyle.com. Gadgets and accessories for wine, spirits, and beer lovers. It's all here at EpicStyle.com.
He's setting down the wine glass and picking up the microphone. Here's your Grape Encounters host, David Wilson.
And it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter. You may have heard me say on previous shows, we're on the road for a really long time. Actually, going to be on the road for a month. And we're visiting a lot of places in California, which produces about 90% of the wine in America, that you might not be as familiar with as the better known wine regions. But then we're going to take off from California and we're headed to Europe. And we're going to venture from Venice, Italy to Istanbul. But that's not for a couple of weeks. And we're going to bring you some great radio from Europe. But before we do that, we're starting out our journey in Monterey. And it's Monterey County Wineries. And we're on the River Road. And it's the Santa Lucia Highlands where we're at, a place you may not be as familiar with. And I think I found one of the hippest wineries in California. I'm so excited to be sitting outside right now. I'm watching the breeze whistle through the weeping willows. There's a beautiful pond. I'm looking out over the most gorgeous landscape. There's like this really rustic, out of a Hitchcock movie, old house off in the distance. And across the table from me is the winemaker of Rath Winery. It's Sabrine Rodhams. And not only is she sitting there, but she's sitting with her pet. Okay, are you ready? Anybody want to make a guess? No, it's not a dog. She has a chicken. That's a chicken on your lap.
It is. It is.
And it's got the same hair color as you, too.
I know. We matched today.
This is serious.
Not all of my chickens are the same color.
This is like not a joke either. This is your pet.
This is my pet. Her name's Feisty. And she's not feeling so feisty, but she's here and she's visiting with us today.
Feisty's had a little bit of a bad day, has visited the vet. I was grilling Sabrine off microphone about how much money she was willing to spend on vet bills for the chicken. And we'll not talk about that
here. Yeah, No.
Let's just say you're going to have to sell a lot of
wine.
She's
a pet. Let's just say it, put it that way.
So she will never become like a McNugget.
No.
Okay, all right.
Never.
All right, so let's start with the winery. This is like one of the totally coolest wineries that a person can ever go to. The label's cool. The name's cool. It's Rath. By the way, it's not Grapes of Rath, right?
Right.
No. Not Rath of Khan, right?
Nope.
It's Rath from what?
Led Zeppelin. To California, baby. You bet. Yeah.
Do you want to sing a little of that for us?
No. You know what? You were talking about the view here, and we are sitting outside, and it's totally beautiful. And the builders, when they built this building, actually built it so you could look out and see the Pinnacles National Monument in the background. I mean, it's a gorgeous setting. And
that's
like
a new national park,
brand
right?
New, yeah. National Monument, I think, last year. Wow. And the Salinas Valley is a beautiful place, and I highly recommend anybody who hasn't been down River Road or been here to come visit us. We have the tasting room out here at the winery, and we also have a tasting room in Carmel next to the cheese shop in the Carmel Plaza in the actual town of Carmel. So,
well, I wanted to make this visit because, especially if you're a listener outside of California, really, if you're not from this area, you may not be familiar with the Monterey County wineries.
Yeah, I think a lot of people aren't, and it's surprising to me because, you know, the one thing I love about it down here is that I feel like we are the next frontier, and I think the initial owners back in the 70s really thought this was the next frontier of wine. And then, you know, everybody knew about Paso, and people know about St. Inez, and people still don't know about Monterey. And the thing that's shocking to me is some of the most amazing wines are coming from this area, and people should come down and give it a whirl. And
okay, this is not a commercial for Rath Wines, but I can say this. So before we went on the air, I got a chance to just go through a pretty large ensemble of the wines. Of course, I spit. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing the show. But this is something that I can rarely say. But I'm really saying it, and honestly, you can see my fingers are not crossed. I didn't taste a single wine that I didn't love. I mean, fantastic wines, fantastic Chardonnays, fantastic Pinots, fantastic Syrahs. And by the way, if you like Pinots, but you want something a little bit bolder, try the Syrahs from Rath because they've got sort of a Pinot quality to them, but they pound their chest a bit.
Thank you. That's a very nice thing for you to say because I know you taste a lot of wine. So that's a great compliment. But we really are cool climates. So we do the Chard and the Pinot really well. And the Syrahs that come out of here are unlike any other. They're cool climate. So you get a lot of exotic characters in them, but they still have the heft of a classic California-style Syrah. In my opinion, they're not over the top, which I like. I like the balance of the sort of spiciness with a little meat, with some berry. I'd rather it be multi-leveled instead of one big berry bomb or one big bacon bomb. And that's what I love about the Syrah from out here, this cooler climate, is I think you get a little bit of everything. And I think that makes the wine a little bit more complex.
So what's interesting about your wines is the fact that, for me, a good portion of the Pinots that I taste are too wimpy.
Right.
And a good portion of the Syrahs I taste are a little too big.
Yep.
And it seems like in both cases, your Pinots are a little bigger and your Syrahs are a little softer and more Pinot style. It's a nice balance. Is that on purpose?
Well, it's on purpose, and it's also the nature of where we are. But, you know, we make 7 or 8 different Pinots, and I think they range too from sort of a, I wouldn't say light, but lighter or more floral style, all the way up to sort of a big earthy style. And I think when you make multiple Pinots or multiple Chardonnays or multiple Syrahs, they have to be different. And I think that this property and the properties that we purchase grapes from, I think we've picked them on purpose because we knew we would wind up with more of an array. And you wind up with something for everybody. You know, somebody who might like a lighter style, a more floral style Pinot, although I have to say even our lighter style Pinot is, it's from California, so it's bigger. And then if you want an earthier style Pinot, you can have that too. So we're sort of here to please everybody.
I'm talking to Sabrine Rodham. She's the winemaker at Rath Vineyards. It's the first time ever that I've interviewed anybody while they had a chicken on their lap. And I got to tell you, I want to just describe this setting for a second, because this is that moment where you wish you were doing cable TV,
right,
or any TV, I should say, because I'm looking across the table at one of the hippest, coolest people I've ever met. She's got on wraparound sunglasses. She's got a chicken on her lap, a microphone in her hand, a wine glass in the other hand. And reflected in her sunglasses is the winery itself. And then in the background, it's like one of those haunted houses from a Hitchcock movie.
That's right.
In the background. But in the foreground is this little pond. And in between are the vineyards. And then there are hills flanking either side. This is the coolest place.
I have to tell you, this is the first time I've
ever... Did I describe that right, by the way?
Yes, you did perfectly. But I have to say, this is the first time I've ever done an interview with a chicken in my lap.
Really?
Not normal. But yeah, the actual house that's in the background is on our label. And so that is sort of our icon.
I am, by the way, as we're talking, I'm taking your picture with my camera, because this is going on the website right now. Okay, smile chicken.
It's not easy to hold a microphone and a chicken.
And a wine glass.
And a wine glass.
All right.
But I'm doing it. I'm doing it.
Okay, so you come from Davis.
Yes.
UC Davis.
Yes.
Masters
in viticulture and enology from UC Davis. Masters
talk,
of science.
Talk to me about lady winemakers, because I'm seeing a lot more of them now. It's really exciting. It used to kind of be a man's world, wasn't it?
You know, it was. And right now, the demographics, at least when I was there, which was a little while ago at UC Davis, and I've actually asked them about the numbers, there's actually more women in school than men, at least in the graduate department at UC Davis. And also, I think... I actually read this really interesting article, I don't remember where it was from, that was basically saying that, and I don't want to, you know, brag, but women winemakers actually are making probably a higher quality of wine because we supposedly have a finer tuned sensory, and that possibly...
I can actually confirm that, because I have seen more than one study that says that women have better palates on balance than men do.
And this was actually an article in where they looked at a study, and they were basically saying because of this that those wineries tend to get more press, and so you're seeing more press about women winemakers, which I thought was interesting. But, you know, I'm just referring to something I have read. I haven't actually looked at the data.
Do you get any pushback from anybody because you're female?
I was a stagehand before, so let's get that straight. I've always worked in a
man's. So you can kick anybody's butt, yeah.
I've always been in a place where there were 3 women and 300 men. So this didn't shock me or surprise me. But when I was here by myself, we had the winery built, but the tasting room wasn't built yet. We didn't have offices yet. We were working out of a trailer. And I would get guys come with trucks, and it would just be me and the forklift, and they'd be literally looking over my head and saying, who's going to unload this truck?
Okay.
I didn't want to burst their bubble and say, you know, come on, man. It doesn't take a genius to drive a forklift. You know, I just think... that he just assumed there was no way I knew how to drive a forklift, which I thought was hilarious because, you know, I hate to say it, but a trained monkey can drive a forklift. So a trained chicken can drive a forklift. So, you know.
You hear that, feisty?
Yeah. So it was, you know, I had a few moments like that, but usually, you know, I think most people in the industry understand that a woman or a man can do this job. At a smaller winery, I have to say, it's a very physical job. There are not very many people that work here, so we all pitch in. And
I don't think people actually get that. It's hard labor, isn't it?
It is hard. And if you work at a bigger winery, it's different when you're a winemaker because you're writing work orders and people are doing what you tell them to. But here, when something has to get done, something has to get done. I mean, if the septic system broke this year, we have to get that fixed. The wines need barrel down by a certain date. That has to happen. Things have to happen, and everybody has to pitch in to take care of it. So
we're talking to Sabrine Rodham. She's the winemaker at Rath Winery. It's in an amazing area in Monterey County. They call it the River Road.
Yeah, right above us is the Santa Lucias, and we're actually in the Monterey AVA in the lower part, but I source fruit from the Santa Lucia Highlands, which is just behind us.
Okay, so this is just adjacent to the Highlands.
Yes, yes.
And that can't be more than a mile away, right?
No, it's right across the street.
Oh, literally.
That hill right there where the cows are, that's it.
Okay, we're going to be back with Sabrine in just a second. It's Grape Encounters Radio. We're on the road for a month, man. We're not going to stop until we've tasted wine in every wine region in the world, which means this is going to be the longest running show.
Sounds like a great show.
In the history of wine radio. Back with David Wilson in just a second. If you make April your month to do some California wine tasting, your friends will surely be green with envy. That's because throughout the month of April, California wines aren't just red, white, and rosé. In April, you'll discover just how green California wines are, too. April is California Wines Down to Earth Month, and wineries all over the state are celebrating the state's leadership in sustainable wine growing with fun and educational events everywhere you turn. California has one of the most widely adopted sustainable wine growing programs in the world, with more than 70% of California's wine growers and winemakers committed to practices that benefit the environment, employees, and neighbors. And best of all, the quality of the wine is simply superb. From Earth Day wine and food festivals and green wine trails to vineyard hikes and horseback rides and special tastings, find out more at discovercaliforniawines.com. Just click on the tab that says April is Earth Month at discovercaliforniawines.com.
As a grape encounterist, you know how much fun an hour of conversation about wine can be each week. But there's no way we can pack everything into a show. Listeners just like you are turning the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group into an incredible online community where like-minded wine lovers converse, share information, and inspire each other with posts on a variety of interesting topics. If you haven't discovered your community, join in today on Facebook by entering Grape Encounters Radio.
Hi, this is the gadget guru, Matt Dubow with EpicStyle.com. They say you are what you wear, and if you're a wine lover, we have an endless selection of wine-themed t-shirts, tank tops, hats, aprons, jewelry, footwear, and more that will make a real statement. And we're making a statement in April by giving you an additional 15% off your entire purchase when you type the code WINE in the promo box at EpicStyle.com, where you'll discover thousands of products for wine, spirit, and beer lovers.
Visit EpicStyle.com.
He's back, and he's not alone. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson and a little help from his friends.
Yesterday's wine, I'm yesterday's wine.
And your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson. I will tell you what, there have been many times when I have sat down to do an interview with somebody, and they were too chicken to go on the radio. But this is the first time that I've ever sat down with a chicken, a real chicken, to do an interview. And the chicken is, I guess we could say, the daughter of our guest today, Sabrine Rodhams, who is the winemaker at Rath Winery. Rathwines.com is where you'll find the wines.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you what, this is one of the hippest wineries that you can go to. You can't get cooler than a winemaker has a pet chicken, first of all. But seriously, you're sitting there with a chicken on your lap.
Yes.
We just tried, I'm going to say, about five or six Pinots, about the same number of Syrahs, two Chardonnays, three French hens, two turtle doves. Everything terrific.
Thank you so much.
Why do you need to have so much variety?
You know, I think it's because we can't decide which one we like best.
Are you easily bored?
Maybe we are easily bored. You know, it just keeps it more exciting for us to try to pair the right clones of Pinot together. You know, Pinot has a lot of different clones and they all taste very distinct. And that's one of the beauties of the clones in Pinot. And when you find that they marry well together, or maybe mixing them all up is better. It's like a kid in a candy store. You have so much to play with. And it's exciting for us. And we also do a lot of single vineyards that we love and places that we've chosen to buy grapes from. And the beauty of that is you can choose four or five different vineyards that are very distinct and different in style. And then see how those actual terroirs play out, how the earth and the dirt and the sky and their geography plays out with essentially the same winemaking practices.
When you taste your wines, do they taste distinctly different to you, one from another from another?
Yes, absolutely.
They do.
Absolutely, yeah.
So like if they were quintuplets, you would know each one of them by their own identity.
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Yep. And I think, too, they have different levels of whole cluster in them, where we put the stems in. They have different levels of the different clones in them. Some of our clones are richer and earthier. Some of them are more Bing cherry, red cherry, sort of those brighter fruits.
If I went inside the tasting room right now, and I asked them to grab me a random Pinot, and I brought it out here, would you be able to tell me which child it was?
So.
Has anybody ever done that?
No.
No?
No, I'm terrified.
You know what? Can we do that?
Yes, as long as if I'm wrong, you don't air it.
No, seriously. I want to do that. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to have our engineer play just a little bit of music for just a
Jeopardy
second,
music.
And we're going to do this. Hold on. Okay, so we've done it. Here's what we did. We actually grabbed two Pinots. You make how many Pinots here?
Seven or eight, I think.
Seven or eight,
yeah,
okay.
A lot.
And so the question was whether Sabrine Rodham's winemaker here at Rath Winery can identify her own children.
Oh, no.
So I was going to go grab one, right?
But
I grabbed
I have two.
I grabbed two instead, okay? So as you sit there with a chicken on your lap, microphone in hand, you have two glasses of wine in front of you. Why don't you grab the one on your right?
Okay.
Take a sip. And tell me which child this is. We've never done this before. This is great. Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to guess that that's 115667. Maybe Exonema.
What's its real name? I think we may have a little... But by the way, we've been tasting a lot of wine here. Okay, now you know this one, right?
This is Buchanoogan.
That's
sure.
Correct.
Yes, I think for sure. It's got that bright cherry. And I think... Although I think originally I thought it was 115667, which is fruity. This is a little leaner. I think this is Swan 828.
You got it. Oh, my gosh. And the crowd is roaring.
Although it does remind me of our Exonema, too. They're light and fruity and fresh.
Is that right, you guys? Is she got it right?
Swan 828.
She got it exactly right.
And this is Buchanoogan.
Right. Wow.
For sure.
Wow. You know what? I was so hoping that you would mess that up.
Well, I almost did.
Because you know what? People love to see people fail.
Right, of course. No, I think that when you make a variety of Pinots like this, they have to be different. The single vineyard threw me because each single vineyard is distinct, but I normally don't taste them next to the other ones.
Now, tell us the name of that one again. It's like Buchanoogan?
Buchanoogan. John Buchanoogan is the owner, and his sons, Garrett and Holly, run the vineyard and the winery. And some of the fruit up there is the most interesting, fun, fantastic. This is clone 113 and 115. 113 I hadn't worked with before. Talk about fun. When it's in barrel, I feel like I'm eating a popsicle.
Really?
And then it really mellows out. And when it gets older, it's just such a constantly evolving wine. And every time I taste it, I'm laughing out of the barrel. And people are like, why are you laughing? I'm like, because I feel like I'm eating a popsicle.
Is that where that term barrel of laughs came from?
Probably.
Do you become as attached to your wines as you do to your chickens?
Yes, I do.
You do?
You noticed. I knew them.
Do you sometimes
I know
like
them well.
Grab a blanket and sleep in the barrel room?
No.
No? So not that attached.
No, not that attached. I don't sleep in the chicken coop either. So that's okay.
This is a question I like to ask winemakers, but they always lie about the answer. Do you like your wines better than most of what you can go and buy commercially? Or do you like a little variety from time to time and it's like, yeah, it's all good?
I like a little variety, but often when I taste that variety, I like mine better. I'm going to say...
Is that because, like, if you cook, you're going to season your food to your personal taste?
You bet.
You make your wines for you, right?
Yep. And especially, I mean, not just the Pinot, but especially the Chardonnay. You know, we're not big oak fans. So we like it super lean and a little bit mean. It's hard to find un-oaked or less oaked or less
there's,
ml
there
wines
like tens
out
of
there.
Thousands of people shaking their head right now going, mean but a little lean.
Yep, lean and mean.
What does that mean?
That means high acid, less oak, less butter. So when we have a wine like our Fermata that you tasted, which means halted, we stop the ml.
I fell
on
in love with that wine, by the way.
It's perfectly balanced because if you don't let it get too buttery, and it has a little bit of butter and a little, it's all, people, winemakers say this all the time, but none of them mean it. Well, some of them mean it. But it's all about balance, and you've got to balance acid. And you can make a super sweet wine, which I'm not, I told you before, I'm not into sweets. But if you put enough acid in that wine and it's balanced, I'll love it.
So Brian Rodham's, we could do 10 shows with you. Honestly, you know what? I've never made this offer before, but I'm going to make it today. And we're going to come back and you're going to co-host.
Oh,
you're not going to be a guest. You're just going to co-host because you are so funny.
Okay.
You are so smart.
Oh, thank you.
And you are so talented. Oh,
thank
my
you.
God, you make great wines.
Oh, thank you so much.
So this is what the deal is, gang. We are in Monterey County in California, the Monterey wine region. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters with David Wilson in just a second.
That first delightful sip of a fine wine brings so much pleasure. But there's a lot more enjoyment to wine than just the wine. It's the fine gifts and accessories for home entertaining you'll find at epicstyle.com. Even those corks you've been tossing become part of your home's decor with simply beautiful wine bottle cork cages. You've got to see them at epicstyle.com. Wine and hors d'oeuvres won't inadvertently become props in a juggling act when your guests have amazing buffet plates that securely hold both food and your wine glass using just one hand. See how it works at epicstyle.com. And if champagne weren't enough fun in itself, your guests will get a real kick out of the one-of-a-kind top hat ice bucket or delightfully decorated champagne flutes. epicstyle.com. It's where you'll find creative and useful wine accessories and all you need for entertaining in all price ranges, even a huge assortment for under $25. Once you visit epicstyle.com, you'll never entertain without it. epicstyle.com. Fine gifts and accessories for home entertaining.
Back in 1976, an amazing, unthinkable event in Paris changed the way the world thought about wine. It was a blind tasting that gave little-known American wines the opportunity to be judged side by side with legendary wines from France. The results of this unthinkable challenge made news around the world and made a humble, Croatian-born American winemaker a true folk hero. Mike Gergich is turning 90 and is still making amazing wines along with his family at Gergich Hills Estate in Rutherford, California. The same qualities that put his Chardonnay in the spotlight and the Napa Valley on everyone's radar can be found in every bottle of wine made at Gergich. You can learn more about Mike and his wines at Gergich.com. That's Gergich.com. Mike, from everyone at Grape Encounters Radio, I want to wish you a very happy birthday. We love your wines, and we love you even more.
Now, back to what you love most, wine and Grape Encounters.
Warm red wine, you know that place where you take me sometimes, where my cares have wings and fly right off my shoulder.
And your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson. And I hope today that I'm taking you to some place you maybe haven't been before, but will feel after you listen to the show that you really need to do it. Today, almost everybody wants to be in the wine business, it seems like, especially if you're a celebrity, you got to have your own wine label. But gosh, back in the 70s, the early 70s, there wasn't a gigantic California wine industry, but there were a lot of people out there who were daring pioneers. And I'm sitting with one of them. I'm very pleased today to have joining me, actually, I'm joining him because I'm in his office, Richard Smith. And he is the founder of this wonderful place that's sitting up, I mean, literally sitting up on this terrace and overlooking a beautiful valley. And thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely, David. Thank you for coming by.
We're doing a tour of the Monterey wine country, and we're on the River Road Trail. We're not far off the 101, but actually, we are kind of in the middle of nowhere, aren't we?
Well, no, you're at my home, David. Well, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I think every wine country in California along the coast is a valley near the Pacific Ocean. And almost all of them have a river, and almost all of them have a River Road wine trail.
That's a good point, yes.
The River Road wine trail here is the southwest side of the valley. The valley runs, like California, northwest to southeast. So we're on the west side of the valley, and as you noted, Santa Lucia Highlands is the escarpment. It's the bench land that's about 150 feet above the valley floor.
So why Monterey instead of Napa and Sonoma? You were up there. You were working up there.
Well, I was in my mid-20s, and I had an opportunity to come here and be number two on the totem pole. on the totem pole was two guys deep. And up there I would...
Did you buy the land at that time?
No. I was a manager with a boss, and we worked with hired labor. So fundamentally, it was a two-man show working for guys in San Francisco who, much as you said, people wanted to get into the wine business. It was romantic. Well, the truth is, it's a job. It's a lot of work. It's another business, and it's a tough business. You got to work hard at it.
But in the 60s and 70s, people were just literally getting to know Napa and Sonoma. So you were really fighting against the odds to be removed from it, you know, a fairly significant distance. What were the challenges in trying to put yourself on the map at that particular time?
Honestly, we had an opportunity to go to Russian River Valley, which was beautiful. And we used to spend vacations up there, and that was our first choice physically. But for opportunity, for my chances to learn more about the business and get more experience, we came down here, and I promised my wife we'd leave in 5 years, and that was in 1973.
Nobody ever keeps those promises.
You know what? She wouldn't leave if I tied her to three horses.
Does she foot stomp the grapes?
No. You know, we came as farmers. We came as growers. We came as wine grape producers. We planted this vineyard for some folks in the Bay Area in 1973. We bought it in 87, and we didn't start making wine until 89. We didn't get serious about it until 92, and we really continually evolved. It wasn't until 2005 that we actually built a winery and took over all of the work ourselves and started making wine by small lots as opposed to working in large tanks at our friends down the road.
Well, let's talk about why geography is so important, because we've got people listening all over the world. And you're in an interesting setting because you are dead south of Monterey Bay, right?
Correct.
And so this is a valley that runs north to south.
Backwards.
North to south, south. Yeah. It depends where you start,
yeah,
right?
No, the bottom end is the north, which is contrary to normal expectations. Most people think about valleys running uphill to the north. Our valley runs uphill to the south.
But nonetheless, because of that, it creates what that perfect growing condition for wines like Pinot, right?
It's actually uniquely so. The unique thing about Santa Lucia Highlands is we have virtually no frost days. Winter is very mild because we're so close to the ocean.
Well, that's a nice thing not to have to worry about.
It's a nice thing not to have to worry about. It's a little bit frustrating for us in two regards. We don't necessarily get all the cold units we like in the wintertime to make a really hard dormancy. The harder the dormancy, the more uniform the bud break is in the spring. So we tend sometimes to be uneven with our bud break in the spring. So we have a mild winter. We have an early start. We had bud break. This year was actually late. It was about March 15th. But we often have bud break in the end of February.
Wow.
So we get started early. And then our growing season has those short days. Every day when you begin to think you're going to get an 80-degree day, and most Mediterranean climates where we grow all the varietal grapes around the world, generally, it stays warm till sundown, you know, warms up until 3 p.m, stays warm until 5 or 6, and then you have the evening, the sun's going down, and you get a little breeze off the coast. In this neighborhood, I would say 2 o'clock is the measurable temperature change. As you move towards the northern end of Santa Lucia Highlands, it might be a half hour, 45 minutes earlier. And as you move down the valley, that cold air mass doesn't get there till 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night.
Take me back to the beginning of this winery and vineyard, because you've been at this a really long time. I mean, I think you told me 1973?
73. If you look at the evolution of Monterey as a region, there was a couple of wineries, Masson, Mirasu, and Winty, that came in the 60s, early 60s. And they were sort of the only people here for 10 years. And the history of California wine, the late 60s, early 70s, I believe in 1970, we were drinking more sherry in California than we were.
Yeah, you had a choice of maybe 3 or 4 different wines in your supermarket if you were lucky. But, you know, there were a handful of people that during that period of time were starting to make their mark. And literally, there were pioneers popping up all over California that were taking some pretty big chances, I think, in terms of the kinds of grapes that they were planting. Was that exciting to be a part of all that?
I was just out of college in 68, and I was working as an ag technician in Sonoma, Mendocino, and Lake County. And when I went to Sonoma County, all of my work was with apples and pears and prunes. And the transition was gigantic. The transition from tree crops to varietal vineyards was probably started a little bit before I got there, maybe 65, and went to 75. And in that 10-year period, you basically saw all of the tree crops removed and everything converted to vineyards.
Did you have any idea at that time that the California wine industry had the potential to explode the way that it has?
You know, right about that time, Bank of America wrote a white paper, and they thought that we would go from, we were about 2 gallons per capita consumption at the time, and they thought we'd go to 9. And so part of what was driving this was the perception of the ag lenders, that this was almost open-ended opportunity. And the reason I came down here, obviously, I wanted to get out of the technical work and get involved in production, but I came here because tax laws made going into the wine business a tremendous opportunity for people who had high tax bracket incomes, professionals, lawyers, doctors. They were able to put a dollar into a vineyard, and they were paying tax rates at the 70% rate or higher at the time. So it really only cost them 30 cents. They would either have paid 70 cents in taxes or put the dollar into vineyard development. So I came along with many in the newly developing areas, Sonoma, Mendocino, Monterey. We were the frontier of the premium varietals at the time, and it was almost our best guess.
I'm talking to Richard Smith. He is the founder of Paraiso Vineyards. We're in Monterey wine country, and we're in a beautiful spot. I wish you could see it, but it's really hard to see this on the radio. You can go to our website and check out a picture. What's exciting, I think, not just in California, but all over this country, really actually all over the world, is the fact that there's so much wine being made, so many diverse varietals in so many interesting places. And you know, you could spend the rest of your life coming to places like Monterey Wine Country, and you're going to find a different experience every place you go. They're all unique.
I'm on the board of Wine America, which is the national wineries organization. And my wife and I have been participating since the mid-70s, often with tastings at Capitol Hill. And I can tell you, 30 years ago, we poured a lot of wine into the planters as we walked around and tasted other states. And today, almost every state has some good wines, and some have great wines. And they've been on a really steep learning curve. And I think what you find now, Finger Lakes, you get a lot of Riesling, you get some Chardonnays and Pinot Noirs, you go down to Long Island and you can have some pretty nice Merlots. There are places where you would never think that there should be premium wine production going on, and they're doing great. The exciting thing is wine is becoming part of the American culture, and I think part of what you're doing is being able to reach out to areas that don't think of themselves as wine country. The scary thing about wine is that people don't know about it. The wonderful thing about wine is every single person can find a wine they like. It's an experimental process. Every wine's different, and your taste and my taste probably aren't exactly the same, but we can enjoy wines that each other enjoy, and there might be something that you enjoy that I'll never drink. And likewise, I will drink something that doesn't appeal to very many people.
Does it seem to you that the wine business and world is traveling down two different roads simultaneously? And what I mean by that is you have an enormous amount of bulk wine out there made from, you know, essentially recipes, formulaic. It's the same every year. It's very consistent, but it's also very uninteresting. And then on the other hand, you have this explosion of boutique wineries and people who are painting with grapes, literally. And everybody's got their own special creation. It seems like both ends of that spectrum are getting bigger and bigger. Do you feel that way?
If you've been drinking wine for more than 30 years, you know the everyday wines used to be pretty scary. I mean, they were rough. They weren't necessarily enjoyable. That's almost non-existent today. You almost can't buy a wine in the $7 to $12 range that you don't enjoy. And so the ability to be able to just have an everyday wine that's enjoyable is gigantically improved. And you're right. There's a million artisans. There's 8,000 wineries that are producing wine in America, 4,000 of them in California. And last year, the Department of the Treasury approved 126,000 labels, 126,000 different products approved last year. And the, I mean, each one, even if we just change the vintage date. But that's the kind of selection that the consumer has. It's also the kind of confusion that you're faced with. So you got to go out, meet the people, and I think for the kinds of wines that you're talking about, the best way to find those is to go local and get to know the people and get to know the products. Very common in Europe to spend a weekend every 6 months driving around, finding the wines that you want to take home, and they'll take 10 cases home and use those for their wine supply that year.
Well, in the final analysis, why we're here right now is to open up yet another window for people to look through. Hey, Richard Smith, really a pleasure to be here with you. And the website is Paraiso Vineyards, and that's spelled, by the way, P-A-R-A-I-S-O, right?
Correct.
ParaisoVineyards.com. Check it out. They've been around for a long time, and this is a great place to come visit, and there's lots of other places up the road that you can visit as well and work your way all the way up to, what, Monterey Bay and Carmel.
There you go. Spend the weekend golfing.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters Radio coming to you from Monterey Wine Country in just a moment. I'm David Wilson.
Well, David Wilson uncorks the next story. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Grape Encounters Radio.
That first delightful sip of a fine wine brings so much pleasure. But there's a lot more enjoyment to wine than just the wine. It's the fine gifts and accessories for home entertaining you'll find at epicstyle.com. Even those corks you've been tossing become part of your home's decor with simply beautiful wine bottle cork cages. You've got to see them at epicstyle.com. Wine and hors d'oeuvres won't inadvertently become props in a juggling act when your guests have amazing buffet plates that securely hold both food and your wine glass using just one hand. See how it works at epicstyle.com. And if champagne weren't enough fun in itself, your guests will get a real kick out of the one-of-a-kind top hat ice bucket or delightfully decorated champagne flutes. EpicStyle.com. It's where you'll find creative and useful wine accessories and all you need for entertaining in all price ranges, even a huge assortment for under $25. Once you visit EpicStyle.com, you'll never entertain without it. EpicStyle.com. Fine gifts and accessories for home entertaining.
Back in 1976, an amazing, unthinkable event in Paris changed the way the world thought about wine. It was a blind tasting that gave little-known American wines the opportunity to be judged side-by-side with legendary wines from France. The results of this unthinkable challenge made news around the world and made a humble, Croatian-born American winemaker a true folk hero. Mike Gergich is turning 90 and is still making amazing wines along with his family at Gergich Hills Estate in Rutherford, California. The same qualities that put his Chardonnay in the spotlight and the Napa Valley on everyone's radar can be found in every bottle of wine made at Gergich. You can learn more about Mike and his wines at Gergich.com. That's G-R-G-I-C-H.com. Mike, from everyone at Grape Encounters Radio, I want to wish you a very happy birthday. We love your wines, and we love you even more. Your Grape Encounter continues, but I'm not walking down this road without our best friend of the show, Matt Dubow of EpicStyle.com. And Matt, do you know why I've asked you to join me on this little adventure today?
I have no idea. You haven't let me in.
Because you know what season it is, Matt?
Oh, God, what is it?
He's shaking his head. Is it football, baseball, basketball? No. It's one of my favorite seasons, being the diehard romantic that I am. It's picnic season, Matt.
Oh, picnic season.
And who says life is no picnic? Because life is a picnic for me, although I have, I think, shared with you in the past some picnic horror stories.
I don't think you need to bring those up again.
Well, some people might not have heard some of the bad luck that I have had on picnics. I have been traveling a lot. I'm on the road constantly. And one of my favorite things to do when I'm on the road is, you know, meet up with friends and pack a picnic, you know, stop at one of those little, like, gourmet markets especially.
Yes.
Why are you looking at me like I'm going to come up with something that's going to be inappropriate?
I wasn't giving you that look.
I pick up an indigenous bottle of wine. You know what I mean by that?
Yes.
Okay, so it's like, depending upon what wine country I'm in, I'll pick up something local, something lovely and local. And then I keep with me, I take it with me wherever I go, my picnic ensemble, baskets and backpacks, those kinds of things, whichever I choose, from epicstyle.com. Because you are king of the picnic.
I think you're king of the picnic.
I am, but you outfit me properly, and that's the nice thing. There are so many really cool things that you guys have. This funny thing, true story. Before I ever met you, before you were ever a sponsor of the show, before you were ever were a radio superstar, before they even called you Gadget Guru, I was using your products. Truth be known, there's nothing better than having a really great picnic set. Do you like picnics? You almost look like you're not a picnic guy.
I would say that wouldn't be my go-to, is to have a picnic.
Why?
It just has never been something that really was something that interested me. I think if I'm having a picnic, it usually happens if I'm at the beach. And I wouldn't even call it a picnic because I'm probably in the water most of the time, either in the ocean or I'm paddleboarding. That would be as close to a picnic as I would say.
Not a romantic picnic? You're just going to go paddleboarding instead. Whoa. You're like doing guy stuff out there.
Yeah.
It's not in your repertoire to ask a lady out on a picnic where you've got the perfect wine, the perfect cheese. I mean, Lord knows, you have the perfect cheese cutters and knives and boards and things like that. You've got the perfect acrylic glasses. You've got the perfect plates and even those kind of plates that'll hold your wine.
Yes.
You even got stuff you can stab in the ground that'll hold your wine glass so you can take stemware out on a picnic and it's not going to spill.
We do. We have all of that. Now,
so with all that stuff, and I'll bet you get a discount.
I know people. Yes.
You're not gonna go on a picnic. Why?
I'm not saying
you had a picnic tragedy.
No, I haven't.
I have, you know.
Oh, well, I know your stories. And I don't know if you really want to tell them. I mean, go ahead. But
well, it used to be that I liked to. I'm going to tell them. I'll tell one.
Okay.
It was like a second or third date. I had my perfect picnic pack. Okay, so it was the picnic backpack, right? And I had, you know, really nice plates that went with it. I don't know if they're acrylic or plastic?
They're plastic.
They're plastic, right? Okay. I had acrylic wine glasses, stemmed glasses, lots of, you know, nice containers that I had bought to pack food in, which I prepared because I am a good cook, right?
Yes,
and,
actually you are.
And I brought two really good bottles of wine along with me. You know, just because you're going on a picnic does not mean that you buy a screw cap wine, right?
Well, correct.
Yeah, you bring a really cool corkscrew, a waiter's friend, or you're not going to bring the power up.
You could actually bring the power up because it's rechargeable.
Battery operated. Yeah, I know, but that's a bit much, I think. I mean, that would scare somebody. You pull that thing out, you know. Anyway, I worked for hours and hours and hours preparing this picnic, went to just the right spot. It was in a park. There were lots of people throwing frisbees and stuff like that, laid out the blanket, spread everything out. And she looked at me and she said, "You don't expect me to eat that, do you?" Just like that. "You don't expect me to eat that." You know why she said that?
Why is that?
Because I think she thought I was going to poison her.
Again, this is probably a story I wouldn't talk about.
Well, no. I mean, here's the thing. You're in a park for pizza. I mean, sooner or later, I mean, it had been like, it had to be like a third date. We were in a very public place. I wouldn't even think about doing those kinds of things. I mean, who does? I guess people do that. But, you know, but choose your company wisely. I was a reasonably high-profile person.
Well, this just tells you who was she with previous.
Yeah. Scary, huh?
Very.
Anyway, I ate all the food myself and didn't die. She watched me. She didn't even say, "That looks good." She was insulted by the fact that I didn't go to some market and buy prepackaged things to serve her.
And I know you. You go all out. I've had your food. It's very good.
I have cooked for you.
You have.
Impressed?
Very, very. You're a very good cook. And I know you like, you go all out. So she was missing out.
She drank the wine.
Because it was in a bottle.
And it was unopened. And she said to me, it's a good thing that bottle of wine is unopened. Otherwise, I would not have drank it.
You didn't see her again, did you?
Like, I mean, who goes to a picnic with a bottle open? Oh, here, this is left over from last Wednesday when Matt came over. But we vacuum-vined it.
We preserved it.
It's preserved. All right. Anyway, lots and lots and lots and lots of picnic and outdoor eating fare for wine lovers. Well, beer lovers and spirit lovers too, right?
Yes. But most of the picnic baskets or bags do have acrylic stemware in them.
Yes. EpicStyle.com, folks, is picnic heaven. You can't get a barbecue there, though, can you?
No, not at this time.
Well, you don't take a barbecue on a picnic anyway, right?
No.
Because you could burn down the forest and Smokey would be ticked. What you can get, by the way, though, is 15% off. It's the big April deal on everything Epic Style's got.
Yes, we're having a special in April. And in the promo code, put wine, W-I-N-E, and you will receive 15% off your order. That's wine in the promo code, and you'll receive 15% off your order.
W-I-N-E.
Yes.
And 15 meaning 1-5, but you don't get a discount on shipping, but how much could it cost anyway?
It's inexpensive.
All right. Matt, I think that I need to take you on a picnic. You're just looking at me. No, we'll just have a guy picnic.
A what?
A guy picnic.
I don't even know what that even is.
I don't know what it is.
We'll be back next week, but you'll find nearly 200 podcasts and so much more at grapeencounters.com.